Welcome to the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin, your source for real estate investment jewels of wisdom.
Welcome to the REI Diamond Show, the show dedicated to discovering the jewels of wisdom that real estate investors are applying to maximize their return on investment. I'm your host, Dan Breslin, and this is episode 111 with Michael Quarles on closing more than 1,000 deals across the U.S. Before we get started, I'd first like to congratulate you for taking the time to listen to this podcast. I know there are a lot of other things and a lot of other people are doing with their time, but you're here with me right now soaking up the tools, techniques, and strategies that my guests have used to build themselves prosperous real estate careers. It's actions like this, listening to podcasts, reading books, and of course, applying the things I've learned that helped me build Diamond Equity Investments into the off-market deal machine that it is today. Anyway, today's guest, Michael Quarles of the Michael Quarles Podcast, YellowLetters.com, and four or five other real estate investor businesses, joins us today to discuss his marketing approach and system for buying houses all over the U.S. without ever stepping foot in the market. Michael also talks about his criteria for selecting markets, which you know I am a student of. If you are at all interested in learning how to pinpoint the markets with the highest probability of making a profit by buying and selling houses, you'll need to grab a pen and a pad and be prepared to take fast notes. I personally couldn't write fast enough, and during the episode, I was glad that it was recorded so I could go back and rewind what he says. A lot of details in a short period of time. Anyway, I was excited about having Michael on the show, knowing that he's a contract-a-day investor like myself, so I knew that this episode would contain some very rare, very valuable jewels of wisdom. Let's get started. All right, welcome to the show, Mr. Michael Quarles. How are you doing today?
I'm doing excellent. We're going to have some fun.
I love it. I am here in Chicago, where I live, and based our companies out of. Where are you in the United States, I assume, recording from today?
I am sitting in my office in Bakersfield, California, and don't hold that against me.
All right.
It is just like the rest of the United States. And although we basically built the city in the desert, so right now it's about 108 degrees outside. However, I love it, and you know, I'm not going to move. But here I am.
Fair enough. So I'm sure a lot of the listeners already know who you are from your multiple four or five companies at this point. But for anyone listening who doesn't know who Michael Quarles is, can you give us the background, how you ended up in real estate, what you did along the way briefly, and then what your business looks like today?
Well, now I'm 56 years young, coming up to my 57th birthday. I'm not certain how I'm going to take that. However, 37 years ago, I decided that I love dirt. I was waiting to for my enlist date in the U.S. Air Force, and it was a summer, and I had nothing to do. I was an adult teenager. I opened up a newspaper. Those were things that we could read back then for news, and they had a classified section, and in this classified section, there was an ad for an R2 lot. I did not know what R2 meant. I know what lot meant. I called the realtor. He was an agent at Century 21. First and only property that I have ever bought from a real estate broker or agent or a realtor. And I bought this property. I did not realize, however, that he was going to cash my deposit check because there wasn't any money in my bank account. I did not realize that you had to close escrow before you could start manipulating the property. I did not know a lot of things, and had I known that, I would not be sitting here today. I'd probably be in the Air Force. But I fell in love with dirt as I was digging my curb and gutter and found it pouring my foundation. Now, this was prior to me owning the land. And I called my recruiter, and I asked him if I could get out. He looked at me strangely, and he said, well, I guess so. And here I am about 1,000 houses later and a few businesses I'm proud to own. And real estate to me is, it's blind. mean, it doesn't care what we are. I can be a guy, a girl, undecided. I'd be a, you know, it doesn't really matter where I was born, what language I speak. It doesn't care. It only cares that I go to work every day. And I like that. I like being an entrepreneur. I like, you know, pushing myself out of bed and working as late or as little as I want. I like the freedom of buying a property from anywhere in the world. And I like the advantage of making massive amounts of money over a paycheck. And so I really never had a J-O-B. I did have it. Well, I shouldn't say that. I did have one. I wanted to date a manager of a store. So I got a job there just to, so I could start dating her. Once I started dating her, I quit. So it worked. Other than that, I love houses. I love dirt. I just think there's just not a better way, for me anyway, to make massive wealth. On my first deal, the one that I just didn't know what I was doing, I also got seller financing on the lot. So go figure that here an adult teenager is not like, I mean, I'm a teenager. I can't even legally drink. And I'm out there doing something. I have no clue what I'm doing. And when the owner came up to me, he says, dude, you can't be building on the land yet. It's not yours. I said, someone should have said that. And he says, here's what we'll do. And I scrunched to cover the check on the deposit. I think it was $2,000. And he said, I'll finance the balance for you. And so I got seller financing. Didn't even know what seller financing was. And I'm a big believer in we can do it or we can't do it. And whatever decision we make is right for us. And so my nugget that day, 37 years ago, was I just thought I could do it. The knowing how to do it wasn't the important part. You know, the four stages of life where we look at the first stage, we don't know what we don't know. That was me. And then I quickly learned what I didn't know. And then I slowly learned what I didn't know. I mean, I learned what I knew. You know, so I learned what I didn't know, and then I learned it. And now it's like another language to me. So it's been a great journey.
True enough. So what happened with that first deal? How did you find the money? I assume you built something there. And do you still own it today? Did you sell it? What did you do?
Well, so my whole life was in entwined in this. It was a duplex. Basically, it was a square box with a roof, but it was a duplex. I sold it. I made $16,000 to finish building it and all that. I scrunched and did everything I could do to build. Now, well, this is in a time in the world before computers. Yes, government had computers and large businesses had computers, but the consumer didn't have them. And this is a time period when we didn't have some restrictions on permitting that we have today. So I was able to go down with my little stick drawing, literally looked like a little stick drawing, and get my permit. It cost me less than $300. I didn't have any plans, so they basically gave me, you know, the handout plans from the back of the counter and showed me how, you know, how deep my foundation had to be. And I just did it because, you know, when you're kind of sometimes invincible, and if you have the invincible mentality, and I always tell people, you're going to make a mistake. I mean, life's about mistakes, and just fall forward. Just get up. Don't let it stop you. There's nothing learned from the second kick of the mule. And so if you don't learn it on the first mistake or the second mistake, you just got to go forward. Just got to push yourself forward. And I love it. I try to help as many people as I can. So if you have any listeners listening who just feel like they're getting beat up because life's getting in their own way and they don't have the mental resource yet to know that they can do it, have them give me a call. So I'll change any person that doesn't have the belief in themselves to a believer in themselves pretty quick, because I've been that down that road. And so raise your hand, guys and gals that are listening. I'll absolutely help.
So we have at our company here, I have 87 deals on my board right now and zero from real estate agents. So you and I have a similar story in that one deal that came from the real estate agent. I had one deal. You know, for the first 10 years, I did one deal with a real estate agent and I lost money on that deal. And that was like part of my claim to fame. Since then, I've had a lot of agents who bring me a lot of great properties that we do make profits on, and we make it smooth, quick, easy, you know, one offer, doesn't ever hit the MLS, and they have their deal wrapped up. But, I kind of know what the answer is for me and how I generate it. You know, literally we did 9 contracts, brand new contracts with sellers yesterday alone. And we've got close to 50 for the month of July right now. I know how I generated those off-market deals, but can you enlighten the listeners and me as to how exactly you go about doing 1,000 or so deals without real estate agents involved in any of them?
Sure. And I should back up and tell you, I'm a real estate broker in California, so I understand the brokerage side of business. And I absolutely believe in using a real estate broker to sell a property. I think it's the highest and best use of our time. That said, I don't think it's the highest and best use of our time to find the deals, because I know what they're going to do for me and earn as they're earning that commission. I can do that for myself. So I'm going to use the commission dollar to send out direct mail or do some pay-per-click or do some YouTube advertising or some TV advertising or my center of influence advertising, my call text advertising, email advertising. I mean, I'm doing a complete facet, 9 steps of advertising to get the phone to ring. Because if we just only do one, well, if that one's broken for a minute and a half, well, we're going to be out of business for a minute and a half. So I don't want to ever have my lead generation broken. So I want to just keep churning it and churning it and churning it. I find direct mail, I like it a lot because I can find my prospect. I know where they're at, what properties they own, how that property qualifies to me. Unlike when I do pay-per-click, I don't know my prospect. So some of those prospects that call me won't be, although they'll be highly motivated, they won't be as worthy from an equity position as the direct mail folks will be. My commercials, I like them because those are high prospects. But again, I still have the problem with equity position. But we have to do a lot of different types of marketing, and we're always marketing. Everything we do is marketing. How we answer the phone, how we say hello, and how we say goodbye, what we do after the phone stops ringing, and how we carry that prospect from a suspect to a prospect to a closed transaction, and the follow-up and follow-through. So there's nine pieces to it. And our world's changing a little bit. Where in the old days, you know, direct mail was really strong. I mean, that's one of the biggest ways to get deals. Well, we have a huge digital wave coming at us, and it's from a business perspective. If we're not preparing ourselves for success in the digital arena, shame on us. And so what I mean by that is, if you walk into any store, any restaurant, any bar, any place you're at where there's multiple bounce people there, a good majority of them are looking at their cell phone. Well, if that's the case, and we know it is, then we need to be marketing to them to that device. And so I'm a big believer in text marketing, not preemptive text marketing, but follow-up text marketing, because we know it's cheaper to market to a prospect after they've called us than it is to get them to call us the first time. Because it's a touching system, and I want to be there, and I want to be there on the device they're looking at. So text marketing is great. So we use a short code. Short codes are numbers instead of phone numbers. They're just either 5 or 6 digit numbers that they text a word to. And we even have chat on our websites. People will actually go to our websites, rather than filling out the web form, picking up the telephone and calling the phone number, they'll just hit live chat, and we buy houses through our live chat, just chatting with people because we ask them the questions. And so the consumers are changing. What their comfort level used to be isn't the same comfort level today, so we have to change with them. And I don't know if that helped answer that question or not, but we're just, much like you, we're just trying to do deals. We're trying to, you know, solve problems for folks, and create opportunity at a win-win, very ethical, moral situation for all parties involved. And real estate's great for that.
Right on point, Michael. So I have a lot of listeners who are like, they're doing deals. They're not, you know, at the beginning and lost in the dark. So they're going to ask the same thing I'm going to ask. And let's go through the text marketing architecture from start to finish. Sure. Like, would you be able to share, what are you saying in this text message? What do you say to get them to be provide the code? What kind of thing of value are you giving so that they're texting back? Can you start to finish the marketing process for that call to text system?
So text needs a friend. So, and what I mean by that is it needs a partner. So it has to have a deliverable. So the deliverable for me for the text marketing business is a piece of mail, a postcard or a letter, a TV commercial, anything that they can see. So I'm delivering the text message, the beginning of it, with another vehicle. And so at that point, as an example, I say, on one of my pieces, I say, text Alex. Well, Alex is my call center answer person. So I have a call center that answers all the inbound calls. And those folks, their first name is Alex. It's a made-up name for them. Their real name is something else, but they're Alex. And we use Alex because we know that the prospect on the other side of the phone, they don't know if Alex is a girl or a boy. They're just predisposed to what they're predisposed to. So we want them to feel comfortable where if I use the word Mary, someone may not want to call a female about selling their house, and Mary would be a turnoff. Or if I use Michael, someone may not want to talk to a Michael. So we use Alex. We also have Ryan's for the negotiation stages and Angel's for the term stage. Nevertheless, I digress. I apologize. So it has to have a vehicle. So the vehicle is text this word to this short code. And we can text to phone numbers too. However, short code seems to be a little bit easier for folks because they understand it because of the American Idol kind of concept. You know, vote for your contestant that you like the most, to this phone number. And when we get that back in, now they get autoresponders coming right back out to them, which the first autoresponder is, thank you for texting in. We're going to need to retrieve some more information. Please fill out this form. So it takes them to a URL that is a standalone web form. That standalone web form is going to retrieve their information. They're going to put, I already know it's John Doe because when they text in, my service goes into the self-service provider and determines who they are. Every once in a great while, we won't be able to identify them because it's a company cell phone or something like that. But most of the time we can. However, so I know it's John Doe, but what I need from John is I need his address and what he's hoping to sell a house for and what he thinks it's worth. As he's filling out this form, he's going to get another text message from us, letting him know that we're going to call to contact him back in a moment. And so my Alexes are now going to get involved. He may not answer the phone. He's going to get another text message from me. If he doesn't qualify, so we go through this process and we're texting back to each other. And by the way, the system's automatic. A person's not doing this. And so I hope your listeners don't think they have to be texting all these people because it's absolutely automatic. And say we don't do something. They don't qualify to be a prospect yet. So we're going to tag them in our system as a prospect to follow up on, not as a seller, but a prospect. And that person's then going to get 3, 5, 7, 10, 15, 30, 60, 90 text messages from us that says, 3 days ago, you showed interest in selling a house. 5 days ago, you showed interest in selling a house. 10 days ago. And we're going to start churning that and allowing them to raise their hand when they're ready. What we know is when they introduce themselves to us in the first place, when they took that step, that leap for them, they may have not been ready, but they've started the ready process. We have to be there when they're ready. There's very few times we're going to buy a house from someone on the first contact. It's a follow-up contact where we're going to buy in the house. So we need to be there when they've decided, okay, I am now ready. Because what happens is our peer groups, our realtors, our investors, our lenders, people are touching them in the real estate business. And maybe not intentionally touching them. Maybe this person thought about selling their house, so they text in, and now they walk into a convenience store, and on their way into that convenience store, they see a realtor magazine. That's another touch. It's a subliminal touch, but it's still a touch. So now their brain's starting to think about real estate. The real estate trigger word is a little hotter for them. Well, now they're going to get another text from me in 3 days, and it says 3 days ago, or in 5 days, it said 5 days ago. And so now I'm another touch, and then they're going to listen to a radio, you know, some music on the radio, and all of a sudden the DJ is going to say something about real estate off the cuff. And so there's another touch. And so I have to be there when they have been touched enough. They're going to go home. They're going to see a for sale sign across the street that they didn't really notice before. It's been there for 2 months, but they didn't really acknowledge it because it wasn't of interest to them. But now because we're touching them, it becomes more interesting to them. Then they go in, they have dinner that night. They look at each other and they say, maybe it's time to sell our house. And I need to be there. And I know if they're like most people, they don't erase their text messages. So now they can reinvite themselves to communicate with me. I was talking to this guy on my phone, Alex, or girl, whoever they think they are. And they can go right back to their cell phone with all of my information and start talking to us again. It's pretty dynamic. Now, we have to have systems in place. I'm a big believer in systemization, because if you don't have systems, you might as well just go get a job with someone that has a system. But if you have systems and they're in place, then people will follow your systems for you, and then you'll have 50 deals done in July.
So, Michael, how many of these deals are you putting together right now? I know you have a multitude of systems running. I mean, what type of deal volume comes from 9 different ad campaigns running, and what size of the market they operate?
We look at a contract a day. That's our goal. There's days that we don't. There's days that we'll make up for the day we didn't. And now we're buying all over the United States. So where some investors, and we kind of all start there, which so I understand it, bless their heart, they knock on a door. We don't knock on doors anymore. We never see our seller. We never see our house. And so that allows me to go into the hot market as an investor. So I can go into a Florida market, which is really hot right now, and some good numbers are coming back from it, and hit it. What I like about pay-per-click and direct mail is I can hit it fast, and I can turn that faucet off fast too. So when that market dries or gets cold and another market pops up, then I can go to that market. And through our systems, because what happens is I get a house under contract, pre-seen. So we've never visited the property. Now, we've seen pictures of the property because via the cell phone, we've asked the consumer to go take some pictures of their house, interior, exterior, up both sides of the street. So I'm going to look south and look north or east and west, depending on the street. We've seen the house from the picture perspective. We haven't seen the house from a physical perspective. We then start with our BPO for $150, send a real estate agent, typically an REO agent out there, because they're the ones that tend to know what a BPO is and how to put them together. And if that BPO comes back at the what we anticipated the value of the property to be in as-is condition, then we'll fall forward to a home inspection. That home inspector is going to go out there. If that number for a home inspection comes back at the what we believe the repair value will be, we'll go to an appraiser to have a lendable document. That appraiser is going to come back. He'll tend to be, or she'll tend to be, a little bit less than the BPO agent. The BPO agents are a little bit more excited than the appraisers are. Every once in a while, that's the converse is going to be true, but most of the time, the BPO is going to be better. But if it's coming in line and we have a 5% rule, so if we contracted something at $400,000 or it valued at $400,000 and we bought it for $280,000, then if it's only worth $380,000, I'm okay. I have a 5% rule on my appraisals. Because I know one, it's an opinion. So another appraiser could be 5% higher and make it at $400,000. So I spent $1,000 proving my contract. At the moment I have the decision that I'm falling forward. So I am opening up closing. So I'm going to get my prelim, make sure my seller's my seller. At that moment, I'm starting the MLS. So I drop that thing on the multiple listing service and I sell it conventionally. So I'm going to do a concurrent close, simultaneous close, whatever they call it in the area that you're in. Sometimes I won't be that fortunate. Sometimes I have to pull down the property and hold it for a couple of weeks. However, our buyers tend to be other investors who are coming to the table with cash. And it's a great formula. So I don't wholesale. I call it wholetailing. So rather than dealing with ARV, which is what a fix and flipper does, I'm buying it at a percentage of as-is value, and I'm selling it at 100% of as-is value, using a real estate professional, paying them 6%. So I know I'm going to have 8.25% costs involved in every real estate transaction, because I have a double close and a single payout on commission. And I'm fine with that, because we're buying at 65 cents on the dollar. So that 35% gross turns into 8.25% less. And our nets are pretty strong. And we're dealing in a market. Whenever we hit a market, we do a marketing algorithm where most people will go, I'm just going to market to this area because I like the sound of the city. Well, we look at a city and we look at our algorithm calls out for how many cash buyer absentee owners last 6 months per zip code, how many units per zip code that are single family, what my REO count is in that zip code, what my notice of default or list pending count is for that zip code, what my average days on market is, what my median sales price is, what my position is, how many units do I have with 30% equity or greater, how many of those units are in the bottom of 30, top 30, and middle 30. We lay that into two algorithms, and then we lay those algorithms on top of each other, and it's going to tell me the part of that city that I can market to. Now, prior to me picking the city, prior to me going into that city and running that algorithm, I'm going to run a rent roll and a median value on the city in the first place. Let me give you an example. So if I go into San Diego, California, three bedroom, the rent roll is $2,900. If I go to the median sales price and I use an assumption of 4.75% interest, PITI, I have an exposure of $4,000. So I have an upside down city from rent to ownership of $1,100. I won't go into a city where that is upside down more than $200 per $200,000 of value, because I can't see a sideways walk on a tenant. So I want to go into a city, although I'm not selling to an owner-occupant, I'm selling to an investor who's selling to an owner-occ, I want to go into a city where they can walk sideways. So if I go into a city like, there's several in Florida, several in Tennessee, where my rents are, let's call it $1,350, but my mortgage PITI is $1,100, I'm hitting that city hard because I know they can walk down, save themselves $200 a month in an expense and exposure, have home ownership and the write-off from home ownership. And so I like those cities. So before we hit a city with marketing, and before we do our marketing algorithm, we're justifying the city. And take it for what that's worth. It works for us.
That's interesting. So do you double close on every one of these deals? Do you do an assignment at the closing table? Are you funding
We've only done one assignment in my career. I'm not a believer in assigning. I think in some areas, some assigners are acting like real estate professionals, and I worry for them. So I always get a licensee in, and I double close. And if I can't double close, I'll pull the house down either with terms or with cash, one or the other. Keeping in mind, we're writing contracts for 60 days. We're not in a market where the market takes longer than 60 days to sell. So my days on market when I run my marketing algorithm have to be fewer than 50 days because I need 10 days to do my inspections. So if I'm in a market that's a 39, 34, 26, 13-day market, I know I'm going to have that property sold by the time my contract has to be cured. And we share everything with everybody. So my contract with my consumer, get this, you're the seller. Let's assume role play for a second. You're the seller. My contract tells you your house must appraise for $400,000 and I am buying it for $280,000. And you're okay with it. My contract tells you in advance that as I buy your property, I'm going to try to resell it, do a concurrent close, and the profits from that concurrent close are mine. My contract tells you in advance, and I'm going to put the house on the multiple listing service. I'm going to put a for sale sign in the front yard. I may put a lockbox on it with the keys to your house inside of it. I'm telling them all of these things because I think when we tell the truth, when we expose what we're doing, what we're professionals at doing, the consumer's okay with it. And it makes me sleep a lot better at night. And we're fine with it. We're fine with the seller knowing we're going to make $120,000 on their property, because what we're promising them is the $280,000 on the day of their choice. And it's much like when you sell a car back to the car lot dealer when you buy your new car. You know you're selling it cheaper than it if you sold it yourself. It's just more convenient to do it. And there is an uncertainty, even though you have low days on market, there is an uncertainty if you will sell it, or if that buyer can actually perform when they sign the dotted line. And there's nothing worse for a seller than to be mentally and emotionally packed up and ready to move and have a realtor call them and say, sorry, but the buyer really wasn't a qualified buyer, did not know that until now. It makes the realtor look foolish. It emotionally drains the seller. They don't have that emotion with us because we can always perform.
What are your favorite three cities right now, July 26, 2018, where you are marketing currently, Michael?
Louisiana, there's a city there, Florida, the coastal line, and Central California. So Central California for me is Bakersfield, Fresno, Modesto, Stockton, Lodi does not touch Sacramento, and then Florida and Louisiana. But those are great. But we're gonna turn. The markets are all gonna change a little bit, and we're always looking at market numbers. And 3 years ago, it was North Carolina was hot, and there was a while there that Texas was real hot, and not that Texas isn't a great. Now, in every market, there's profitability. Sometimes it's harder to be profitable because you have to do more things, but every market's profitable. In every market condition, there's profit in it. So even if we have high interest rates and that sort of thing that we had in the 80s, I was still buying houses and making money in it. We had to mitigate the high costs of some of the housing holds and the cost of holding it back then. But there's profit everywhere. And so those, you ask for cities, those are areas. So here's what I'll do. I'll send anybody that asks for it through you. So I'll send it to you. They can just ask you for it. I'll send you my Excel spreadsheet of 113 cities with data where they can just click a link and go to a data page. Look at what I just said. So they'll go median rents, median values. Then they need to go to mortgage calculator, put the median value in there as a mortgage calculator, get a payment back. I'll send you the rent roll for every city in the United States that's active current right now. So if you're if your listener really wants to do some dive in research, it's at their fingertips. Anybody that would like to see the algorithm, which takes about 8 hours to actually put together, I can send it to you. I can tell you that when anybody looks at it, they won't know what to do with it because it takes a lesson to learn how to put it together. However, when you put these things together, there's a science to real estate buying.
Yeah, that is absolutely mind-blowing the way you approach this business, then set up like a tent sale, like the circus is coming to town, and then when the market does not favorably, like trading stock options,
right,
or any other kind of trend follower, when it does not suit you any longer, you're getting out. But it's not like Warren Buffett. When he gets out of the stock market, he's got to sit on the sidelines and there's just no buys. You are moving on to somewhere in the United States. There's always a niche where these numbers are starting to make more sense or starting to make less sense. They're going up, they're going down, they're more favorable or less favorable for you. That's mind-blowing. How long is your typical stay, if there is one? What would be the shortest and what would be the longest that you've stayed in the market?
That's a great question. I mean, Central Valley, I've been here forever. And I like it only because I like it. I mean, although we still run the same algorithms and we do the same thing. To answer that question probably best, I don't think I've ever been in a location less than 6 months, and I don't see myself ever in one longer than 2 years. So, and I'm just playing in that arena. And we change pretty quick. I like the water faucet concept of a location and not being emotionally tied to the experience of real estate investing. So, yeah, that's 6 months to 2 years. But in my valley, I've been here for 37 years, so.
So I have one last question on this topic before we switch gears here, and that is, do you have any, like, methods for seeking out the right people, the right home inspectors, the right agents, the right BPO agents? How do you find the people in the market to operate?
Well, the beautiful thing about BPOs is there's a national company that does BPOs. They're $150. And what we have learned, and we have picked the wrong market before, and we learned this really quick, which is a nice thing about a market. If I can't get an agent to give me a BPO, I can't find a buyer for that property. So when we used to do, there was a time in my life where I would used to do national pay-per-click and not necessarily concern myself with market stats. I've become smarter. If I had a house under contract in an area that looked like all the numbers looked good, call my BPO company up. They can't find me a BPO agent. I can't buy the property because I can't find a buyer. If I can't find an agent to tell me what it's worth, I can't find an agent to tell a buyer to buy it. And there's a lot of truth to that. So we have found that the BPO agent's great because he's our boot or she's our boot. And boot meaning the person that's in the marketplace who has the short list of vendors to board up a house if we have to board it up, to get a home inspection if we have to get a home inspection, to get an appraiser, because they're there. It's the Century 21, it's the Coldwell Banker, the Prudential agent, the local brokerage agent that's there, who's used to doing it. Remember, BPOs, as you well know, they do a lot of REOs, and in REOs, they do a lot of work for a lender at 5%. Well, I'm giving them 6%, sometimes more, and the agents like doing what they're doing. I mean, they're agents, and I like agents. Some investors are critical of agents, like we think they're the enemy. They're absolutely not the enemy, because our consumer, they can't justify using a real estate professional to maximize their return. And so our service is their solution. Well, I can justify the agent in the to sell the property, because the reason the consumer can is because a lot of times the consumer needs to count on the money on the day of their choice. The property doesn't qualify for a real estate professional, in their opinion, to service them. And so we start with BPO, and the BPO's finding the other service providers. And one of the things that we have to be conscientious about is you can't go into 15 different markets at one time, because it's costly. There's a lot of cost to finding your resource providers and then having one in every area. Where if I go to, for lack of better cities, Taft, California, where it's population's probably less than 30,000 people. It's a gold mine for property buying and property flipping, and there's like three agents in the whole city. Well, once I go there, I have my service provider, and if I buy multiple ones, I'm using that person multiple times. And if I give a real estate professional 10 listings, I'm making that person a superstar. I mean, they're going to get an award from their broker every month. They're going to get their picture in the newspaper and say, hey, top producer. So I'm making a superstar out of these people. And they work for their money. They do a great job. So to me, real estate professionals are valuable. They're hardworking, honest people. Some of them need to go get another job, but that's in every business and every career. But for the most part, we rely heavily on them. So we find them through a real estate professional, and we find that person through our service provider. We tried to get around our service or national service provider and see if there was a better way. And so there was a point where we would go to Trulia and Zillow, because agents market there on those platforms. And, you know, if you pull up a zip code in Trulia, it'll say, hey, call Mary Jane and John Doe and Susie Seller. And these are the three top realtors in our area. Really, all that is three realtors that are paying for advertising space. What we found is those realtors aren't our realtors. Our buying realtors aren't the person we need to do business with. We have to have a listing agent. So we really need the guy or the gal that understands BPOs, not the guy or the gal that shows houses, because the showing the house realtor is not our vendor. It's a mind frame difference. And if someone wants to put someone in their car and drive them around city all day long showing them houses, that's great. Consumers like that. We're beyond that need. So I just need someone that understands the listing side. And if they double end it, great. I want every agent that works for us to double end their property. I'm not ever going to ask them to pocket list it. It's not in my favor for them to pocket list it. I want the exposure. That's why I'm entering the MLS in the first place. So if they can double end it, great. But I'm not going to ask them to pocket. I want that hitting the market as fast as possible and get it resold.
That's cool. We're hitting our wrap-up segment here, so I'm going to switch gears if that's all right. What we should do, though, is maybe we could do a follow-up, because I know your story. I check out your podcast. I know a lot more of what I would love to spend the next 3 or 4 hours asking questions about, but that's just not realistic for us today. So maybe we can schedule a follow-up in a few months, and we'll circle back around and hit some of those other topics. So on the personal side, I like to ask this of people a lot that I meet who I know are successful face-to-face, rarely on the show. You'll be one of the first. But do you have any personal habits, strategies, or life hacks outside of real estate which help you help contribute to your success in business and in life, Michael?
Do I have anything I like outside of what I do during the day that influences and helps me do what I do? I heard this expression, and it was a comedian. I can't remember his name. He was on the Howard Stern show. I'm not a big Howard Stern show listener, however he was. And so he's on the show, and he said he doesn't have work in his work week, but that's all he does. I fit that same thing. So
I don't have any
work in my work week, but that's what I do. And so, you know, it's like I love my wife, school teacher, 29 years. She loved being a school teacher. It's loved going at work at 6 o'clock in the morning and working, coming home at 3 or 4 or 5, whatever it was. She loved having the holidays off, the summers off. She loved her peace and tranquility. I get it. I don't like vacations because I can't do what I enjoy doing. So if someone asked me, what do you do that's enjoyable that contributes to what you do to produce income? I produce income that's enjoyable. And I have a three-dimensional brain. It's something that it's a curse that he blessed me with. Or I'm assuming God was a he now for everybody that thinks it's not. I apologize. But a three-dimensional mind. So I see things that normal people may not see, and I'm very analytical. So I'm constantly in the stage of searching for being better tomorrow than I was today. How can I improve on myself? And so that's, to me, that's my life hobby is how do I become better? Now, you know, those six areas of your life you should improve your life in. And I've let myself down on a couple of them because I enjoy what I do so much. However, life is fun. Life is good. Life is rewarding. The biggest thing for me, I was coming out of my favorite restaurant 3 days ago, getting into my Rolls Royce, and not that, and that's not a bragging statement. That's a success statement. So I drive a Rolls Royce. Getting into my Rolls Royce, I have a concealed carry permit because I drive Rolls Royce. It's amazing that you have to get one when you get a Rolls Royce, but you just do. So I'm coming out of the restaurant. All of a sudden, this car pulls up behind me rather speedily, rolls down the window, did not look like someone that was going to have a pleasant altercation at the moment. So I'm always prepared. I used to be an MMA fan, so I used to fight in the ring and learn how to do all that stuff. So I really enjoy that. And he says, man, and I look in the car and I get past the first suddenness of what he just did. And he's got five little babies. They're probably all from 3 years old to 5 years old, 6 years old. He rolls in his window and says, man, do you have any money for food? And the first thing I said was no, because everybody's conditioned to say no. And then I thought about it as I got it was getting in my Rolls Royce. Now, my Rolls Royce will close its own doors for you. It cost me $300,000 for that feature. As I pushed the button so the doors would close, I'm thinking about this man who said he was polite when he said thank you, but I didn't give him any money. Rolled my door back, my window down. I said, dude, hang on a second. I gave him every dollar in my wallet, and I did it because I'm a real estate investor. I was able to do it because I've done what I had to do in life through real estate investing to get me to a place that I can help the person who can't help themselves in the moment that they can't help themselves. And that's the beauty of what we do in the day.
True enough.
Yeah, you know, I used to buy homeless signs. I would fill up my trunk of homeless signs at the time I was driving a Bentley. And so I go to go up to the person that's carrying the homeless sign and say, how much you want for your sign? And they typically is a male, and sometimes females. And they look at me like I was silly. And I said, no, really, how much do you want? So I put $30, $20, $60. I think the most was like $100. However, the last sign I bought, when I turned it around on the other side, it said, I buy houses. And I decided at that point, never do it again. But now we do what we do and to help people. And that doesn't mean we have to be foolish with our money. But there's people out there that we can all touch. And when we touch them the right way, that will create success. Because I look at those five little babies in that car, and one of them will grow up and remember the story of a stranger giving them all the money in their wallet so that they could eat. And that it will empower them to be successful themselves. And if we can just do that once a day, then that's the hobby of life right there.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I hit the gym. That's one of my personal habits. More energy, you know, I eat right, so I watch my physical health, and really I treat that's my wealth in life. That's my real wealth. How much time I had left will be impacted by how healthy I approach everything in my life. But I'm at the gym today, and I wave to this guy with long hair, and he waves back to me. And it reminds me of the time I saw him begging for money outside the Chipotle. It's got to be like 2 years ago now. And then I saw him in the gym, and I heard about his story. He's a homeless guy, lives here in Chicago, and he comes to the gym two or three times a week. He takes a shower there. He hits a little workout. And I don't know where else he goes or what happens to his life after that. But after I heard the story and I knew he had asked for money for food outside the Chipotle to one day, I went and I just tucked a $100 bill in his hand, like, just here you go. Just go get some food. It's, oh, this is great. And it's like I'm reminded of that every time I see him. He smiles when he sees me in the gym. He waves. He's not. Hey, I'm like, hey, do you need anything else? You know, I'd be happy to help. And he, no, I'm good. I don't need anything else. That's really cool what you did. And it usually doesn't circle back as many times for me when I give people at the expressway entrance the money like you had done. I don't ever, rarely ever see them again unless it's the same intersection. But it was cool to, it's cool to see that reminder and see the smiling face. And same as you, there was no $100 bill to give to anybody without any expectation of something in return before real estate investing, flipping houses, et cetera, came to me. So it's definitely a blessing, a gift and a curse, maybe a curse for those around us that I have this blessing that I love work and work is so enjoyable that I do it 7 days a week and don't really like to go on vacations like yourself. So that's cool. Sounds like we're birds of a feather. So, Michael, I'd like you to answer the following question two ways. Book recommendations, one or two books for people who might be just getting started, and like one or two books you might recommend to me or somebody you know has been at the business a while and they've already been doing this thing.
Gosh, that, you know, that's that. The book question is always one of those strange questions because you just never, you never know what the right answer is. But I'll tell you my right answer for me. And I'm being a big systems person, you can't read the E-Myth enough. And the original E-Myth or the E-Myth Revisited, not the real estate E-Myth or the sports E-Myth or whatever they are. The original one and the revisited one by Michael Gerber. I liked, and there, it's on my desk looking at it. I liked Legacy by James Kerr. It's the book's about the all-black rugby team. I really liked that because I could relate to what leadership is, because I think if we ask ourselves every day, how can we be a better leader? If you're a better leader, that means you have more followers, and followers are good. Leaders need followers and followers need leaders. And so if you make yourself a better leader and understanding the importance of it, then you can help people become successful. So I like the Legacy. I also have on my desk, I have Extreme Ownership by two Navy SEAL guys. I liked how they're putting the book together. They're looking at the different facets and how being a Navy SEAL and killing people for a living relates to understanding business practice. And I think one of the most positive things there in that book that my takeaway was is you just have to own it. If you decide to do something, you have to own it. It's like, one of the most frustrating things in my life is to see people that are half in. They're not all the way committed. Well, if you're half in, that means you're half out. So that you need to be committed. And so I like that book for that. But, you know, from a Christian perspective, I think the Bible is probably the best book anybody could read. Now, there's going to be a lot of people say, oh, crap, he just said it. However, it's for some people and it's not for other people. I tell this story a lot. Being 56 years young and almost 57, I have an individual that lives with me who's 91 years old. He reads the Bible every day. He is either one of two things, the slowest reader in life, or he is looking at the truest understanding of the book. My uncle, who came down with cancer, is a Catholic priest. And of course, priests don't have family. So when you become unable to take care of yourself, you either go to a nursing home and die, or someone steps up to the plate and invites you into their home. And I did. And so I get to talk to my uncle every day, who is the wisest individual I've met. And I must have done something horribly wrong in my life that God put a priest in my house for the rest of his life. However, it is absolutely a joy. So though those are my four books, I would bless on anybody. And if you don't like reading, listen to them.
Yeah, that's great. And you mentioned the Bible, and I don't share that often with people, but from 2011 to 2013, right before my company started to take off to, you know, increase double over the past couple of years, I read the Bible cover to cover from those years. It was very amazing to see, you know, the luck maybe in my life or the blessing in my life start to appear, and my ability to work and my mindset toward life in general. Everything just got better after reading the Bible cover to cover multiple times. It didn't take me 2 years, but I guess I was maybe looking at the truth like your uncle did.
He reads it in several different languages, which I think is unique. And I think when you focus, because that's what it sounded like what happened for you, when you focus on any one thing, that focus is going to transcend itself and attach itself to all aspects of your life. Whether it's you're reading the Bible, or whether you're reading a really good management book, or whether you've decided that I'm going to focus on my body and get six-pack abs, or I'm going to focus on MMA because there was a time I really focused on it and I got to be somewhat decent. I could get beat up fairly regularly. But when you start focusing on something, one thing, something happens to our person. Other things around us become crystal clear, that when we go through life where we're just half-assed, where we don't have any meaning or purpose, like we're lucky, then we get to old age and we don't have anything. But if we go through life focused, like I have a destination in mind, because you can't ask for direction if you don't know where you want to go. But if you know where you want to go, there's plenty of people that can give you the roadmap and show you how to get there. You have to be focused. And you have to be a believer, because, again, we all start in that stage of we don't know what we don't know. But I know what they don't know. You know what they don't know. And they have to allow us to show them and be okay with it. And as long as I always tell people, do things ethically, do things morally, and legal will follow in line. Because something can be legal and not ethical or moral. So if you do ethically first, morally second, then you'll live a good life.
Cool. So, Michael, if you could go back and share the crown jewel of wisdom with yourself, you're out there digging the curb before you even owned a lot, what would that crown jewel of wisdom be that you would tell yourself back then?
That's too easy. I have discovered the word require in my life. And I would tell my young Michael to stop wanting, hoping, and wishing, and needing, and require it. Because I think when we get so caught up, or at least I did, with the fantasy, because we don't want it enough that we require it, whatever the it is. But if we require it, if every action that we take, every decision that we make is based upon the requirement, then we'll have every success, all success that we'll want. And the achievement will be magical. But we get so much of my life in the younger years, because I just didn't respect money. I didn't understand it. I wanted it. Yeah, it sounded good to be a millionaire and blah, blah, blah. The moment I started requiring myself to succeed, yeah, that was done. That was over. The new chapter is helping people understand their requirement in life. And I call it my dessert of the day. I take a phone call. I have five businesses. I take a phone call every day from a customer who doesn't know me, who has no clue what my walk was or has been in life. And I try to help them. Because getting to do that's my dessert. That's the meaning of my day. And if I get to do that with a stranger and give them some direction that they couldn't have seen on their own or envisioned by themselves or read in a book, then I'll just be as fat as I can be with that. Because that's cool to me.
Nice. So if anyone wants to get the Excel market info spreadsheet that you had out there that you mentioned earlier, is there a contact information you'd like to share, maybe some URLs?
Well, it's easy. I have a website, michaelquarles.com, Q-U-A-R-L-E-S. And you can Google me. So if you don't remember how to spell it, Google does. Go there, fill out a, Michael, yeah, I want this thing and I'll send it back to you. You know, one of the things, that the strangest thing that I've always, not always, I guess, recently, last dozen years or so, realized that a trait that a lot of people have that they shouldn't have is they're afraid to ask for help. So if that's not whoever's listening, but you need help and you need something, it's up to you. You got to just go and just fill out a form and say, hey, Michael, can you send me that stuff? And I'll send them the stuff. It's, you know, I have an abundance and prosperity mentality. If I give something away, I've not lost it. I still know it. I still have it, but they have it too. And it's pretty cool. The jungles is going to get really full of really successful people in my life.
Nice. Hey, Michael, I really appreciate you taking the time out to come on the show. Thank you. I have several pages of notes here. I have several pages of questions for our next episode in a couple months here, and we get you back on the show also written down, ready to go. But thanks again for taking the time out of your day to be here with the REI Diamond Show listeners.
You know, it's a pleasure. Thank you for inviting me, and it's great. I enjoy it. I appreciate you being here. I appreciate the resource for the people that are listening to you. And I absolutely, they have to be enjoying it themselves as well.
And thank you for tuning in to this episode of the REI Diamond Show. If you're interested in the pre-release of the next episode, getting it a day or two ahead of the email, please subscribe on YouTube or one of the podcasting apps, including iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher. If you have certain suggestions about topics, questions you'd like me to answer on a future episode, or maybe you have a guest suggestion, somebody that you'd like me to reach out to and invite to come on the show, or just say hello, you can contact me directly by clicking on the Contact Dan link at reidiamonds.com. At that site, you can also check out profitable real estate deals for sale and the entire archives of the REI Diamond Show, now totaling more than 111 episodes. Accredited investors are already earning double-digit returns passively in real estate. Are you? You can sign up to receive private mortgage investment opportunities via email by going to superchargedreturns.com. And I am always buying houses, so I am always looking for deals. If you have a fix and flip deal available right now in the markets I operate, currently Chicago, Philadelphia, Atlanta, Miami, or Tampa, please send me the details by email, or you can also use that contact link at reidiamonds.com. Thanks again for tuning in to the REI Diamond Show. Dan Breslin here. I will catch you on the next one.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin. To receive email notifications of new weekly episodes, sign up at www.reidiamonds.com.